Moncrief on News Talk.
In romantic relationships, at least the way they're depicted in films, it's a big deal when someone says, I love you. But nowadays you hear it used in all sorts of contexts. People love their parents, their siblings, their friends and their pets. So has the traditional Irish emotional constipation towards such things completely gone away? Is the word used so much now that it's been rendered meaningless? We're joined by the psychotherapist, Enda Murphy. Afternoon, Enda.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. People get very hung up on a definition of the word love.
Well, what is love?
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, I remember when I was in college being told, are we born with love or do we learn it? And the reality is we're born with it, but we learn to lose it over the years. And love, the hidden word in the word love is the word unconditional. Because in order to feel loved, you have to believe that you're accepted completely and utterly, unconditionally the way you are. And unfortunately, we don't live in an unconditional society.
No.
From the moment you can walk, you're expected to do this. You go to school, you're expected to sit down. And most of life, you're expected to do things that are totally an anathema to what your brain has been biologically designed to do. So when people often say there, you know, like kind of, oh, I knew my parents loved me. And whenever I'm actually told that, I will always ask, I'll say, well, how do you know that they loved you? And you'll find that in an awful lot of families, there was this, and you put it really nice, an emotional constipation, because their parents had never learned how to express love. Mm. Because love and the word unconditional, and, you know, you're around the same generation as I am, we grew up in a very theocracy, all right, never learned or were accepted as you are. You were told the person you had to be. And you would find the same with people who came from, say, Eastern Europe. That the Communist Party decided, well, this is the way you should be. This is what you should be doing. So nobody ever actually learned how to be the person they were. They learned how to be the person they were programmed to be.
To be, yeah.
And that's why an awful lot of people would say, like, kind of, oh, I knew my parents loved me, but they never said it. It's just, okay, so what makes you think that they loved you? And it says, well, they fulfilled their duties. They fed me, they brought me here, they brought me there, brought everything like that. But there was this emotional constipation. And unfortunately, is it around the same nowadays? I'd like to think it isn't. But I'd like to say that it's as a result of things like YouTube and TikTok that the information of what we have known for donkey's years is much more out there. And people are learning how to express things and how to do it. Like, love isn't a word. Like, I can say I love you, but it means absolutely nothing. So love, by its very nature, is always about putting the needs of the other person first.
Now, yeah.
Even that can go down a road of codependency where you're always putting everybody's needs first. All right. So it's finding this magic balance. And I remember I have a friend, Sean, who used to always say, if I want to have a miserable day, all I've got to do is give myself my complete undivided attention. So.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, though, I mean, and you hear a phrase love language that people express their love for others in their own individual ways.
Yeah.
And by the same token, that generation of our parents who never told us they loved us, there may have been many ways in which they told us their love in their own way, if you know what I mean, rather than just the functional, they fed me and paid for my shoes.
Well, in what way did they do it? So if you actually ask, all right, yes, they did what they were programmed to do, all right? And, in an awful lot of Ireland, as it still is the same, you know, people did on the surface level what it was they were expected to do, and in behind the doors, they did exactly what they were going to do,
all right?
So everybody just kind of ignored it there, you know? So it's really kind of, you know, you have a need to be accepted unconditionally. Now, if you didn't receive that unconditional love, you will develop what's called the kind of recovery characteristics, all right, of codependency, where you've never learned how to fully understand and accept yourself. Mm. But if you know, like, kind of, this goes right back to Erikson back in the 50s, where if children at various stages of their life, okay, are kind of accepted and guided kind of thing, all right? But, you know, I like to say your role as a parent finishes when the child is 8. From 8 onwards, you become a mentor.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
And we can miss it all together as well, because how men will express love and how women will express love is completely different. You know, an example of that would be, we release oxytocin. All right. That's the chemical hormone that we release when we're in love. All right. And how women express that, all right, how they release oxytocin is through both sexual and non-sexual intimacy. How men actually do it is through non-sexual intimacy.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the only way a man will fall in love with you is through non-sexual intimacy. Yeah, it's completely different. But of course, people don't understand that the other gender is doing something completely different. So when it was a case of, you know, kind of doing a talk like this, you can go down half a dozen rabbit holes, all right, as to what love is, where it goes, you know, how do you express it. But if you do receive all of these, all right, things, and it's the unconditional acceptance, then you learn to unconditionally accept yourself. And that's the cure for depression, for anxiety, and nearly all the ills that actually we suffer in.
It's a big ask, though, to unconditionally love someone, because if you, you know, and I mean, whether in a romantic context or not, that if you know somebody, if it's, say, a family member, you know them very, very well. You know their strengths, you know their flaws.
Yeah.
You love them nonetheless. But that doesn't mean you ignore their flaws.
So no, you don't.
So it's not unconditional in that sense.
If you replace the word you with the word we. So in other words, you're as much a joy to live with as I am, Sean.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I wouldn't want to be unconditionally loved in the sense of, have you met me? You know what I mean?
Well, I haven't met with you.
But you know what I mean? Like, I know people love me, but they also know I can be a, you know.
A pain in the arse. Yeah. Right, but sure, but as long as we all understand that we're a pain in the ass, okay? And if you understand that you're actually a pain in the ass, then you can actually focus on characters, kind of things that you're doing that's annoying everybody. But if you have the conditional that I'll only love you if you behave in a certain way, then for children that's incredibly damaging.
Yeah.
In other words, I've seen, I'm working in this game now for a long time, all right? I have never seen a child or a teenager or an adult for therapy who grew up in or were grown up in an environment where the environment was too loose. I've never seen that. I've only ever seen them for therapy when the environment was too strict.
And love was withdrawn under certain
exactly
circumstances.
Exactly, it is, yeah. All right? So it's the more restrictive you are, the more controlling you are, you're completely powerless against other people. But if your children learn how to make mistakes, because in order to succeed, you first got to learn how to fall flat on your face.
Mm.
So, you know, like kind of you have a Newton thing, there was no sports thing. You know, if you're conditionally accepting yourself, then you says, oh, God, that's the shogun. Do I know what am I going to do now? But you just rolled with the punch and it says, well, they must be out there playing five-a-side. And that's the secret to success. And it all starts with love, because love gives us connection. And the opposite of connection is addiction. The opposite of connection is addiction.
Yeah.
If you aren't connected with the people around you, you will find something else to connect with. And that can be drugs, alcohol, sex, work. It can be the internet. It can be your own TikTok. It can be, you know, your own phone.
Mm.
But the opposite of connection is addiction. And that's what happens when we don't receive this unconditional love.
Yeah. When between friends, even if they're close friends that they've had for a million years, is it necessary to say I love you to them occasionally or somehow let them know that?
Well, you know, like my few friends, all right, you know, like my best friend, if we had to live with each other for longer than 5 minutes, we'd probably kill each other.
Yes.
But we've been friends for donkey's years, okay? And, you know, like kind of in my own case, you know, I have ADHD. So the way we define friendships is completely different to the way neurotypical people define friendships. So that I mightn't see you for the next 6 months.
Yeah.
But once, because there's been no need to, all right? I don't need to constantly be reassuring each other, all right? But if something happens, we just pick up where we actually left off. But I always know you have my back. So I could lift the phone at any time and vice versa. And that's the way friendships work. Now, when you get to the whole area of platonic, all right, you know, most relations, you're down another rabbit hole now, because most relationships are transactional. You have something that I need and I have something you need. So we'll be friends until we actually do it. And that's why as you go through life, you will end up having friendships. Say, you know, the kids are young, so you'll be at the local mother and toddler group. All right. And then as the kids get older, you might end up joining the golf club. So as to different times of your life, you will develop alliances with other people.
Mm.
But those can be incredibly fickle. you know, and yeah, understanding
they're
how
situational, really.
They're situational kind of thing. You have something I need and I have something you need. Unconditional love is that I actually, you are always aware of my presence in your heart.
Yeah. Why is it then? Because my experience, and it sounds similar to your experience as well, that the non-situational friends I have are ones I've known since I was a child.
Exactly, actually. Yeah. And how often would you have contact with them?
Well, we have a WhatsApp group, and today we were organising how we'll get together next month, kind of thing. It's that kind of thing, you know.
The usual Christmas thing.
Post-Christmas, because you can get a book in there.
Exactly. My brother was a lovely example. He made two friends the day he started in secondary school. And when he was on his deathbed at 46, which was, 26 years later, you know, the two of them were there beside him as he died, you know. But they only ever met about once a year, once every 2 years or something like that. But the love was always there. It's the feeling loved. And in order to feel loved, I've got to feel safe, because we are naturally attracted towards people who unconditionally accept us exactly as we are. Yeah. If there's any conditional there at all, I won't bond with you.
Yeah. Maybe then the unconditional part, you need miles on the clock to a certain extent, both for you and for them, just to reach that point where you can be unconditional.
You know, like if anybody's out now around Halloween, when you're out on a social environment, look for the most attractive person in the room. It's not the one wearing the miniskirt. It's not the most physically attractive. But there's going to be somebody, and you'll see them all around you, who are just naturally, they're like people magnets.
Yeah.
And people are just naturally, and it could be a child, it could be a dog, it could be anything, all right? But they are people who are practicing unconditional self-acceptance. And the person feels completely accepted as they are. They feel actually loved. And that's the actual definition of love. It's the unconditional acceptance, and that somebody's able to put my needs first in front of everybody else's.
Yeah, well, then you can encounter love then in all sorts of humdrum situations.
Every day you're walking down the street, and if somebody's like, and you know, how do you practice that? Well, you have to practice like any other skill. So, you know, I have a friend and he's having a bad day, or years ago, before we had the tags, when he'd be going through the toll booth in the M50, all right, on the East Link or the West Link Bridge, he'd pay for the person behind him. He'd just do it. And it would brighten up his day the whole way. Mm. So if you are doing things, do something for somebody else without them even being aware that you've actually done it, because that will actually bring it all back to yourself. But the more you're able to unconditionally accept others, the more you're able to unconditionally accept yourself. And if you ever run into a problem with anxiety or depression, that is the actual cure, is learning how to do it.
One of our listeners says, unconditional love can be dangerous, though. Yeah. Loving someone who is behaving like an abusive asshole is to encourage their behaviour. Also, how could you even love someone like that? It's a trap. Also, it's not saying I love you that proves love. One should see the love in the behaviour of the other.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. Love is an action, it's not an emotion. But if you're in an abusive relationship, if I'm not unconditionally accepting you, say the two of us are in a relationship, then I will put all my energy into trying to change you. I often joke, you know, women don't marry a man, they marry a stem cell, all right? And then they kind of, you know, it will come on like that. But when they do that, okay, if I'm unconditionally accepting you, then I can accept that I'm actually powerless against what you're actually doing here, and therefore I can get out an awful lot quicker.
Yes. Yeah. Another texter says, interesting what your guest said about judgment. There was a study done on mentally ill people who lived in a Rastafarian community in Jamaica. The Rastafarians had a strong belief that all people are God's children, and so accepted and didn't judge the people with mental illnesses. The study found there was an improvement in their symptoms.
Oh, there would be, yeah, because the cure for depression, if I want to have a miserable day, give myself one complete undivided attention. And depression is, I'm a failure, I'm self-rating. But it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Judge not lest you be judged. It's not that if you judge others that they will judge you. It's that if you judge others, you end up judging yourself using the same measure.
Yes.
So you can't learn how to unconditionally accept yourself and relieve the depression as long as you're trying to unless you can unconditionally accept others. So, you know, and it's a double-edged sword. So you'll find that an awful lot of people who are kind of, you know, who become depressed, they're terrified that people will view me the way I view me, but they are also projecting that. And it's one of the few things that Freud and, you know, cognitive behavioral therapists agree on, is that anger and depression are two sides of the same coin. Anger is where I'm saying you're bad, and depression is where I'm saying I'm bad.
Yeah. Love is being, but everybody is too busy doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where we came into the thing. You know, we were taught do the right things, feed the kids, do all the tasks, all right, and don't really focus on what your needs are. Okay. Mm. Now, that's true to a point, but it was all a bit one-sided and was kind of one size fits all. So we'll all sit down and we'll all do this and we'll all do the other. So the philosophies were all excellent, but it was the methodology by which they tried to tried to implement them that caused all the problems.
Yeah. To a certain extent, there was love a kind of a you know it when you see it thing, or you know it when you feel it.
Yeah, you will know when you feel loved.
Mm.
And you know, like kind of if, you know, like kind of to go down another rabbit hole, when you come home and the dog just sees you or the cat sees you and hops up in your lap and you know that that animal actually loves you, all right? It's a nice feeling, like when you have that. But it also means then that I don't have to perform to an expected standard. Now, you can still pull me up on my behaviour. Like, I'm still as much a joy to live with yourself as yourself, all right? But, you know, I can be pulled up on my behaviour, all right? But I can still be loved unconditionally. And most people can't differentiate between the two. But it is the cure for depression. And that's that research study is by unconditionally accepting the person and accepting ourselves.
Yeah.
That relieves the depression and the anxiety.
Yeah.
Because instead of I'm able to accept things I can't control, and I'm able to then control things that I can.
Mm.
All right. In other words, and we normally get that back. It's called the serenity prayer. All right. What's behind all human disturbance? The serenity prayers, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm.
All human disturbance comes from reversing that serenity prayer.
Yeah.
So we control things we should be accepting, and we're accepting things we should be controlling.
My 85-year-old mam always tells me that she loves me. I'm very lovable. But last week, she lectured me because I was using bad language. Jesus, I felt like a 10-year-old. That's, you know? That's fair juice.
Well, it is, yeah. But, you know, mammies are always mammies.
You know?
Like, mammy is all you. You know, mammy's still going to be kind of correcting you. You know, like, kind of, you're mammy's always going to see you in nappies. You've never grown up.
Yeah.
You know, like, kind of, you know, and it's kind of, you know, a woman isn't married with two kids. She's single with three. So, like, he's been in her life.
Well, though, that's an interesting thing as well. In like your mother, your parent, kind of sees you as will still see you as a child.
Yeah.
Somehow within your adult shell.
Yeah.
The same way people who in romantic relationships, when then they're in their 70s, will still see that bit of each other when they were in their 20s. They kind of.
Well, I'd like to. Yeah. Tommy Byrne has ended in that.
It's
I don't know if it's
going
to work, you know.
Yeah.
As my brother-in-law used to always say, he says, in my 20s, I had a very, very broad mind and a very narrow waist.
Yeah.
And he said, now that I got to my 60s, they've traded places.
Yeah. Sadly. Enda, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. That was the psychotherapist there, Enda Murphy.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.